What's good, everyone? Welcome to the first episode of Evo's Thoughts, where I'll be giving you my thoughts on questions you guys submitted. All right, so this podcast, there's no right or wrong answer. I'm just kind of giving you my thoughts on things. So let's just jump right into it. First question. Can you build a beat around acapella stems? Yes, you can. Now, that's a preference, right? Some people like to make the beat and have the writer come in, but sometimes it doesn't work that way, right? Sometimes you have the writer having an idea already prior to the production and say, hey, I got this idea. You know, I sang this melody in the shower or while driving, and what can you do with it? Yeah, I mean, you definitely can. It happens all the time, right? It does get a little trickier because you have to figure out the chord progression. You have to figure things out. Of course, it's probably not in time. You have to almost think backwards, right? Where when you're creating the music, you're just creating and then the writer can do its thing. But when you get the stems to a vocal track, you almost have to think like, what would the track sound like? It's a little tricky. I mean, I do it all the time. Even when it's like remixes and stuff like that, you know, you're taking vocal tracks and you're remixing stuff, making your own tracks to it. For me, it's fun because it's challenging trying to figure out the chord progression. And then with that, you have multiple ways you can take the track. It's not just like, all right, you made the beat and it is what it is. Now you can kind of really change the chord progression. You can kind of do things that make the vocals kind of move a little different, you know? The way I do it is like, I first find the bass line. I find a bass line that grooves to the vocal track. Once I get the bass line that kind of fits around that vocal track, I can go in and build a chord progression based off those root notes. And then from there, I'll just play regular, you know, C major or C minor or whatever, just basic triads. And then from there, once I'm like, all right, cool, this chord progression works, I can go in and extend the chords, make it sevenths, nines, 13s, whatever I want to make it to make the vocal sound more interesting. Question 3, FL Studio or Logic? All right, so if everybody that knows me know I don't use either. Not that I don't like them. I'm not really a fan of computers, though I use a computer. What I mean by that is I'm more of in the box. I love an MPC, you know what I mean? So everything I do is basically all inside the box of the MPC. Now, I've used FL Studio, I've used Logic. I just couldn't get into it. I know a lot of people that use it. It's just not for me. I don't know, like, I guess because I'm a musician at heart, so I like to play everything inside the sequencer and not be distracted by plugins or faders on the computer. I just like to turn on the MPC, plug the bass right into it, sample the bass, play guitar. Just everything I got to do is right there. The only time I do use a DAW, which is Pro Tools, is when it's time to export all my MPC stems into Pro Tools. And then I do all my mixing inside. Now, there has been times where I'm at studios and I don't have my MPC because, you know, certain situations I don't feel like exporting stems and, you know, time is money. I'll just produce right into Pro Tools at that point. But I'm using like, you know, just drum samplers and stuff like that to record into it. And then I'll use Arturia for all my synths. So that's kind of how I use that. All right. Is it possible to have beat block for more than a week? Yes. I have had beat block sometimes for over a month. It's just one of those things where our brains, they're not machines, right? So it's just a muscle. So if you overwork a muscle, eventually it's going to get tired. For me, I have to experience life a little bit. So even if it's just going outside or watching TV, like I love playing Call of Duty, little things like that, even if it's just, let me take a day off and then come back to it the next day. Or sometimes I'm just not feeling the room I'm in. You know, sometimes the room itself could be killing the vibe. Not that it's a bad room, but it's almost like if you're making beats in your bedroom every single day, sometimes you just kind of get tired of being in that room, right? You might be motivated to make beats or write songs. When you look around, you're like, oh, it's this damn room again. When I used to own a studio, It's funny, all my friends used to always make fun of me. Like, I would always rearrange the studio, because when I would rearrange the studio, it kind of made it seem like a new room, at least to me. So I would maybe move the whole room to the other side. And now I'm like, man, like, this feels like, I love this setup. This is crazy. And I would just start cooking up some crazy beats. And then after like a month or two, I get tired and I would move things around. Or sometimes I would actually move to a whole different studio. I would just like leave this studio and go somewhere else. Or I would own a studio, but I would still go rent out studio time somewhere else. And that's, for me, that's like a big thing, is I don't like being in the same place for too long, because for one, you know, studios don't have windows. So after a while, no matter how dope the studio is, eventually it's, at least again, to me, it gets kind of old, because it's the same walls, the same everything. I want to experience different rooms. So, but yeah, I mean, some people have beat block for a week, 2 months, 3 months. I'm sure people have beat blocks for a long time where they kind of just put music, you know, to the side for a little bit and just create other things. They might paint, they might, you know, work on cars, they go hiking, whatever they do, you know what I mean? Just they kind of have another hobby to kind of put the energy into that until they're like, you know what, I'm inspired, I'm ready to go back in the studio. And then that's what they do. All right, so analog versus digital. We're in a digital age. Now, analog has this certain warmth, certain character, a certain swing. It just has a certain vibe to it. And every piece of analog gear sounds different. You can have an old compressor, and then someone else has the same exact compressor, but they might just sound a little different just because this one's more worn out. This one's been through more. This one's, you know, it's been, I don't know, just been through hell, you know what I mean? But it sounds great. Same thing with guitars. You got some guitars that are just beat up and, you know, but they sound great. They're worn in. For me, I find that, again, going back to an MPC, the MPC just has this natural swing, this thing that when you turn it on, it's empty, right? And you have to make something of it. Analog MPC is 16-bit. So when you're sampling things, you're naturally degrading the sound. It's becoming warmer. The transients are getting rounded off a little bit. And it just sounds totally different. It just has a certain punch. With digital, yeah, it sounds great, but sometimes it's too clean. And again, to me, it just doesn't sound authentic. It just sounds more robotic these days. Even with the keyboards, like, yeah, I use the Arturia keyboard, and a DX7 on Arturia doesn't sound anything close to my ears like a true DX7. My DX7, whoever had it and whoever had it before that person and so on, it's just been through hell. It's all scratched up, beat up. The circuitry kind of took a little beating, so the sound has a little wobble to it. It's in tune, but just like a hair out of tune. And these little things is what makes the real thing just sound more authentic and just sounds super dope. Where on the plugin, it's never going to be old, right? You can use it for 50 years and it's never physically going to be like, oh man, the circuitry board's getting old or the tubes are getting so old. It's just, it's a plugin, right? So it's always going to sound like that. Now, yeah, you can run it through RC20 and all these other things to give it that. But I'm more of a turn it on, play it. It is what it is. That's the way the sound is, and that's the way I'm recording it. That's kind of how I go about it. With analog as well, you can push it way harder than digital. So analog distortion is way different than digital distortion. So if you clip something, like my drum sometimes will clip in Pro Tools, and people are like, oh man, your drums are clipping. It's like, but they're not distorting. Analog clipping can handle that. Where digital distortion is different. When you clip in digital, you're getting this like crack and pops. It's just way different. Even when you're mixing on a console, you can push the mix super loud. That's why a lot of people love running just their beats or their songs through an SSL bus compressor. because you can really push it and not worry about, oh my God, like I can only put, you know, so many dB of gain on this track before it clips. So that's like the thing with analog and digital. It adds character, right? And a lot of people still use analog if you think about it. When you're using a preamp, you know, Neat 1073, that's analog. Your Apollo is digital, which is emulating analog. But a lot of guys are still using analog as far as preamps and EQ, stuff like that. Not many are using analog gear to make beats on, but there are guys that do it and are great at it and are still making a living doing what they're doing. Now, again, it's all preference, right? So no one's going to listen to my beat and say, oh, that's an MPC beat. Unless you know that I use MPC, of course you're going to know, but no one's really going to say, oh, I think he used a 1956 Strat on this record. No one's going to know. They're just going to be like, oh, it's a guitar. It's probably a Strat. Cool. That's all preference. I mean, you don't have to buy vintage DX7. Next question. What does my vocal chain look like? Every vocalist, I change it up sometimes, right? For hip hop, I'll use the Neve 1073 as far as the preamp. But then if it's like R&B singers, sometimes I'll use the Avalon. So it kind of depends on the singer. But lately I've been using the Neve 1073 going into the LA two-way compressor. Now I'm using all of this through the Apollo, so I'm not actually using the analog. I used to have the analog preamps, but just being more mobile, I just kind of like the Apollo. It's just more mobile. You have to carry things around with you. So the Apollo is the Neve 1073 going into the LA two-way, which I'm only compressing about 2-3 dB tops, nothing crazy. You don't want to overcompress because there's going to be more compression done in Pro Tools or whatever DAW you're using. That's kind of what I'm doing right now is Neve 1073 into the LA two-way, which also I call it the glue. It kind of glues everything together. Sounds great. Makes the vocals sit on the mix just the way I want it. Once I get the vocals recorded into Pro Tools, I have a vocal bus, which I believe right now consists of Arvox, a Manny EQ, a de-esser, an 1176, which I'm also hitting like 2 dB. Going into an LA two-way, another 2 dB. Going into Soothe 2, and then I'm hitting it with an L1, just if in case I want to push the levels up just a little bit. But I switch it up a lot. You know what I mean? Sometimes I won't use Arvox. I won't use 1176. Sometimes I'll just use the two-way. All depends on the vocalists, depends on the microphone, depends on just the tone of the record that I'm trying to aim for. So yeah, that's just the vocal chain that I'm using right now. Another question is, what is the most important part of a groove, the kick, snare, the sample? I would say the hi-hat, because if you make a kick pattern, kick and a snare, and you play the hi-hat in quarter notes, eighth notes, 16th notes, you'll find the grooves changing. Even though the kick and snare are the same throughout the whole groove, the way you swing the hi-hats, to me, is what's going to give the actual swing, right? Now, of course, the kick and the snare have to be placed in a certain way for the groove to also work. But if the hi-hat isn't right, I feel like you'll lose the groove. Now, some people do where they quantize the kick, but they don't quantize the hi-hats, and then they'll quantize the snare, but then nudge it early. Some people just don't quantize anything. I don't really like to quantize just because I feel like once you quantize, you lose that feel. So the only thing I do quantize is the first hit. So I'll quantize the first kick and the first hi-hat just to make sure there's there's no like pops and clicks in the audio. But then after that, I kind of just freestyle everything. And if you think about it, when you're listening to a band live, right, and you're at a concert, most likely they're not even on time, right? They're slightly off, which allows you still to dance, bob your head. There's no hesitation when you're doing that because it's literally on time, but just a hair off, right? So you can still dance to it. You're still on beat. You're still, you know, tapping your foot, your hands, whatever you're doing. You're not like, man, this thing is way off. It's, again, it's so slightly off, but that makes it such a groove that you can't get if you quantize. And a lot of songs you probably hear out now, they might not all be quantized. They might just be like, yo, play the drums live and just we'll just leave like that. Now, again, just because it's such a hair off, you're not going to ever really realize that it's off. It's not off beat or anything. But if you were to quantize that, you would see that it just sounds stiff and it sounds not authentic. It just, because you got to think, a live drummer doesn't really play, he's not going to play a hi-hat on point every single time, right? The velocity is going to be different. The timing is a little different. The way certain notes are swung, all these different things is what's going to make the groove. Different parts of the hi-hat, you can't hit the same part of the hi-hat, but the way the stick moves around the hi-hat a little bit kind of changes the tone, even though it's still a hi-hat, but it just, the closer you get to the bell of the center of the hi-hat, the tighter the sound gets. So by doing all these things, you create this groove. Now going into the sample, if it's a sample that's has a lot of movement, then most of the groove will probably be that. That's going to be the foundation where you can kind of base the groove now. Okay, this is kind of what the sample's doing. It kind of already almost tells you where the kicks and snares should go. You can kind of already hear the hi-hat. And from there, I mean, unless you're really chopping the snare, or I'm sorry, the sample and really doing something crazy, then, you mean, yeah, like, you can make the groove any way you want. But I do feel that the hi-hat probably plays a bigger part than the kick and the snare, because that's like the metronome, right? So if you're hearing a kick and a snare by itself, it's like, cool. But the minute you add some crazy hi-hat pattern, and it doesn't have to be like crazy, like trap stuff, but even just the way the live hi-hat sound and the way the drummer's playing the groove, it's going to change the whole thing. So yeah, I would say that the hi-hat is probably the most important part of the groove. If it's not a hi-hat, sometimes even like a ride cymbal or a crash cymbal, just certain things. If you have a crash cymbal hitting on every downbeat, that's going to now give you that that high energy, like gospel or rock. You mean just like real powerful. If you swap that out for a hi-hat, you'll notice it kind of sounds way different, even though the kick and the snare is staying the same. Next question is, what's more important, relationships or consistency? So this question's tricky because you can be consistent. You can make beats every single day, right? You're consistent. But then what are you doing after you make these beats, right? How are you going to get these out for placements or, you know, TV, video games, whatever you're trying to do with these, or just put them out into the world? if you don't have the relationships to get the music passed down so they can get, you know, placed, then I feel like the consistency isn't really important at that point, because you could know a lot of people and build all these relationships, right? And literally make 2 beats a week. And if they're dope beats and you're like, yo, check out this beat, cool, just got placed. And you can, and you know who to give these to, that's going to be way more important than consistency. Because if you're banging out beats all day in your room, that's cool, you got a lot of beats. But now if you don't have the relationships, then it's kind of like, then what are you really doing other than just making a whole bunch of beats? You know, at that point, you're just kind of feeding your hard drive. And which is cool, again, because then when you do build relationships, you'll have all these records and all these beats to submit and send out. But it's not just about being consistent. You have to kind of balance out consistency and building relationships. So it's about, you know, building some beats, going out, networking, coming back in the studio, make more beats, collab with people, build relationships. You kind of just do that. You can't just be like, I'm just going to be consistent and that's it. Because you have to build relationships as well. Now, speaking of relationships, it's easy to get a relationship with someone, but the hardest thing is to keep the relationship. What I mean by that is it has to be authentic, right? You can't just meet someone and be like, yo, man, I want to work. Let's, you know, send me some beats. It's like, I've met so many people to where, yeah, I could have said, yo, I want to send you some beats, but I didn't. I just kind of, yo, what's up, man? Like, love your work, blah, 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 blah. And we just chopped it up about life stuff or music, but not really in a point where I'm selling myself to them, you know, or persuading them, hey, you should work with me because I do this. It's just, I'll talk about, hey, this is what I do. I'm a producer, I'm a musician, blah, blah, blah. And at that point, it's like, it's up to them if they say, hey, you know, I want to use you for something or whatever. I have friends that are multi-Grammy, multi-platinum. They work with so many people, and I've known them for probably like 12, 13 years. And I've never once said, yo, man, can you give this guy like a beat for me? Like, I'm sure now if I did something like that, they would be like, yeah, because you've never asked me for anything. But a lot of the relationships that I have, I'll just text them and be like, yo, man, how you doing? How's the family? Like, just chopping it up about, you know, just life shit, you know, because that's how you build a relationship. Even like having a friend is the same thing as having a music industry friend. You don't just hit up your boys just because you need something. You hit them up because you're like, yo, man, what are you doing? Yo, we should grab a drink. If you treat the industry guys the same way, just, yo, let's chop it up. Yo, what are you doing? I'll stop through. Like, we can kick it, whatever. By doing that, naturally the music will happen, right? So being around the right people is all you really need. You just build the right relationships. By being in certain circles and knowing certain people, you can just make one beat that week or with them, and that shit can take off. So the consistency part is cool, I feel like, to get ready for the industry, ready for when you meet these people. But most of these guys, they're not really in the studio like, I'm waking up at 7 in the morning to midnight, and I'm, you know, I'm making, you know, 30 beats a day. It's like most of them are just, you know, checking emails. Yo, yo, check this out. See what we can do with this. Like, oh, I just did some hi-hats on this. I did some guitar on this. Everyone's kind of working, adding their little part. So you're not really, you don't have to make the whole beat by yourself. You don't have to, like, you know, be in the studio all day killing yourself. Like, oh my God, I got to I have to make all these beats or else I'll never make it. It's, now you need to build relationships or else you'll never make it. Because unless you can physically go to the artist, go to the manager, you know, go to the A&R, which I'm not saying you can't, but we're in an age where everything is with, you know, collabing with people. When you look at credits, you never really see just one person anymore. It's two, three, four people, sometimes more, as far as writers too, you know? So I would say, like, yeah, be consistent, because that's how you're going to get better at your craft, by being consistent, by being better at understanding frequencies and understanding just sonically how you want your music to hit, and understanding everything that music needs to teach you in order to, like, perfect this career, right? But then also keep in mind that you have to build the relationships, because, again, relationships are way more important than having thousands and thousands of beats, to me at least. Because, again, I see guys all the time where they're not really making tons of beats a day, but they're getting all these placements. But that's because they're in so many circles and they have so many files floating around that everybody's working on. And it's like, we can keep getting placements this way without you having to be in the studio all day just making all these beats. Because what's going to happen is, going back to that other question, is beat block. You're going to end up getting beat block. You're going to get so drained out because you're just trying to make so many beats. But in reality, it's like, maybe only make, say, you know, I'll make 5 beats a week, but super dope beats, like really perfect them, right? And having that and then building relationships, or while you're building relationships, is so much more effective, I think, because now when people say, yo, send me shit, you're not just be like, oh, I'm gonna send you 100 beats, but just because you have 100 beats don't mean they're all good, right? So it's all about quality over quantity. And again, this is just for me, right? You might make 100 beats and 100 get placed. That's cool. But I feel that if I can perfect the mix, the song, listen back to it, listen to it in the car, you know what? I want to add some guitar. Oh, you know what? The drum still ain't right. Like, I really perfect the beat to where it might take me 2 or 3 days to perfect it. So then if I shop it, it's like, damn, like this shit sounds crazy. And it's not just like, oh, I made a beat, next, made a beat, next, made a beat, next, and then boom, I'm going to submit all these beats. Because most likely it's, you might think they're good, but, you know, if you make 20 beats, you got to realistically think, like, are all these 20 really good? Maybe only 3 are good. So why not just perfect a smaller quantity, or quantity of beats, and say, you know what, let me just make 3 or 4 a day and just really perfect these. And you'll find yourself not having as much beat block. You'll have more quality music at the end of the week. You'll have a bigger catalog at the end of the month. And then you keep doing that, you'll have a bigger catalog throughout the year of just more high quality music. And then with the relationship building in between all that, I mean, things are going to get placed. Things are going to happen. Artists are going to fuck with the music. Labels, you know, will like the music. It might end up in a movie, a commercial, a video game for sync. All these things that, you know, you want your music to do. You want your music to kind of live outside that hard drive. So if you have high quality music and high quality, a high quality vision for it, then, you know, you can't lose. So that was all the questions for today. I will be posting a link on my Instagram. My Instagram is Evo Producer. It's EVO Producer, all one word. I usually post on my story, basically the flyer of the podcast, and you can submit your questions. Every Sunday, I'm going to be going through them. See you next week. Peace.